Genesis 21.
So we see, and we didn't really look at chapter 20 last week. It was part of the schedule, but we didn't get to it. But it's just a repeat of what's happened earlier. They go to a place, and Abraham tells Sarah, "Hey, you're my sister, if anybody asks." And so, of course, they start to be attracted towards Sarah. And then God visits with a dream and says, this man is a prophet. Give him back his wife. Give him back his stuff. In fact, give him more than you took from him. And so they confront Abraham about it. In verse number 12 of chapter 20, Abraham said, "Indeed, she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife." So again, to us in our culture this day, we would say, that's weird. But that's not the case back then. Remember, this is before all those rules came about. And we say, well, but naturally you should know that that's wrong. It wasn't. And that's, you know, now we have a very disturbed response to that. We're disgusted by it. But here, it was not out of the ordinary. And so we have to keep that in mind. Of course, we say, and I say that to take us back to Adam and Eve, because everybody says, well, how did they repopulate? Okay. Yeah, that's how. They married the sisters. So we think that's weird now, but it was not against the rules. It was not discouraged back then. So chapter 21, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. And those two things in my Bible are underlined, as he said. As he said. We can count on what God says. We can count on what he's spoken. Those are facts, because God cannot lie. So we need to know his promises and know what he's promised to us. Now, we can't claim every promise in the Bible, right? Because some of those promises weren't to us. They were to individuals or they were to certain groups. And so we can't claim every promise, but we need to know which ones are ours, and we can count on those. In verse number 6, Sarah said, "God made me to laugh so that all that hear will laugh with me." So her mindset has changed. Her attitude about it changed, because when she first heard it, she just thought that was the most ridiculous thing, to be pregnant and have a baby at that age. And she just thought that was unbelievable. But now it's done, and she kind of finds humor in it. She says, well, everybody laugh with me. I mean, it's done now. And not only to have the child, but to be able to nurse that child in her old age. In chapter 21, verse 9, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, which she had born to Abraham, mocking, and she remembers that. Oh, yeah, that's right. When you had a boy, your attitude toward me changed. Well, guess what? Now I've got one. And verse 10, wherefore she said to Abraham, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac." Now, so put yourself in Abraham's shoes. Whose son is Ishmael? Abraham's son. His son. Now, it's not his son of promise, but it's his son. And, I mean, no matter how you look at the situation, I know Abraham told Sarah, "She's your servant, do with her what you will." But it's still his son, and he still loves his son. He still has that attachment to his son. And now Sarah comes along and says, now they got to go. She's, you know, in her mind, she's been tolerant with this whole deal, which was whose idea? Her idea. And I just think about that. Sarah said to Abraham, "You should have talked me out of it." I know it's my idea, but you should have known better. You should have told me no. Verse 11, the thing was very grievous in Abram's sight because of his son. It was his son. And it hurts him to now have to choose. But how many of us have ever been in that situation where we love two people, but we had to choose? We had to make a decision of what was going to, you know, what was going to take the priority at that time, what was going to be more important. You know, I hate to say which relationship was more important, but sometimes that's really what it comes down to. We have to choose between two. And that's what happened here. He had to make a choice. And now he's got a newborn son with Sarah, and she says, get that other one out of here. Verse 12, God said to Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman. And all that Sarah has said unto thee, hearken to her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. So the promise was always through Isaac. The promise was always through the miracle, was through the work of God, not what he could do by himself, but through God. So that never changed with God. God always had a plan. Sarah gave Abraham a workaround, and so he tried it, and it worked. But God said, yeah, that doesn't work for me. And finally, Sarah says, it doesn't work for me either. And so God says, just do what she says. Give, you know, Hagar her own home with her son out of your house. This will be your house with your wife and your son. This is the son of promise. This is the one I've given. This is the miracle. It was no miracle for Hagar to have a baby. It was a miracle for Sarah to have one. And through Isaac, in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Verse 13. Also, the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation because he is thy seed. There's that phrase at the end. What? Because he is thy seed. God says, I'm going to make Ishmael a great nation. I'm going to raise him up. He'll be the father to many because of you. Because I've promised that in your seed shall all the earth be blessed, and those that bless you will be blessed, and those who curse you will be cursed. I've already made that promise to you, Abraham. So because he is your son, he will be blessed. Not the son of promise. He's not the blessing that I intended, but I will bless him and make a great nation out of him. Verse 14. And Abram rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water, gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed. And she wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water was spent in the bottle. She cast the child under a bush, under one of the shrubs, and she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, a bow shot. And she said, let me not see the death of the child. And she sat over against him and lifted up her voice and wept. Now, to understand that this is not a baby, this is a boy. This is a child. And now he's weary with the journey, and she's weary with the journey, and they're out of water. And they've wandered through the wilderness of Beersheba. You have a picture of that in your mind? What this wilderness looks like? What does this wilderness look like? Mountain, desert, rocks, sand, hot. And they've wandered. And she says, I'm spent. He's spent. The water's spent. We're done. And she said, I just can't even bear to. Imagine, any of y'all ever taken a kid to Disney World? I'm thirsty. I'm tired. Carry me. Right? Did I miss anything? That's what's happened. What? Okay. So that's all. Imagine that. Wandering through the desert, trying to figure out, well, where am I going? She's got no place to go. She has no plan. She's just kind of going. And you can go a long way, especially then, and find nothing. There's nothing out there. And she wanders. And finally, he just can't go any further. Y'all ever had a kid do that where they just fall down? I can't go anymore. You say, Disney World, that happens at Walmart all the time. That's why I don't take kids to Walmart. But that's the mindset. So that's the picture. That's the vision. And she just tells him, just lay down here. And she goes a distance, and she said, I can't stand to hear him cry anymore. How many of y'all know that? Okay. So see, all of this stuff is relatable if you envision it, if you really work it out. So she goes a distance where she doesn't want to hear him cry anymore, but guess what he's doing? He's over there crying, and not just crying, but calling out to God. Whimpering. calling for mercy. Verse 17, God heard the voice of the lad. And the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. You talk about the value of a child's prayer. God listens to the prayers of children. What did Jesus say there? Angels do always behold the face of God. So you want to get to heaven? If you feel like you can't connect, find a kid and ask them, pray for me. Your grandchildren, your neighbor kids, whatever you got to do, find a kid and tell them, pray for me. And the Bible says here, God heard their prayer. God calls out from heaven. Here we don't see the physical presence at this point, but we hear the call out of heaven. Hagar, what aileth thee? Fear not. And what's going on in her mind? And I know, you know, in our congregation, no doubt we've got women who have been in this situation where they've left their home and they've taken their child or their children and the divorce is pending and it's time to go. And where do I go? What do I have? I got nothing. I got no place to live, can't afford rent, can't afford a down payment, or turn the lights on, don't have a kitchen table, don't have a bed. And I know that many of us have been in homes like this through our church visitation and found situations where we wouldn't want to have our family live in that way. And the calls have come back to the church, hey, we've got a family that's in need, and they need clothes, and they need toys, and they need beds, and they need pillows, and all that kind of stuff. The basics. That's Hagar's situation. She's been kicked out of the house with her kid, nowhere to go. And what does she get? A bottle of water and some bread. Emptiness. And we can relate to this. This is today. This goes on every day here. God said, I heard the cry of the child. Arise, verse 18, lift up the lad, hold him in thy hand. I will make him a great nation. God says, the problem is you don't have a vision of what's going to happen. You don't have an expectation of what's going to happen. All you can think about is where you are right now. And I know that I'm using this term and it's not used in this chapter, but in your divorce and your separation and being put out of your home. And I know that you think this is the end because that's the home you've known. And that's the safety and security that you've known. But God says, I'm telling you, it's going to be better. He's going to have a great nation. I know that you think, well, by getting kicked out, now he's doomed to poverty and being less than what he's known. But God says, I'm promising you, he's going to be a great nation. She couldn't see that. And she's wandering in the wilderness. She couldn't imagine that. But God spoke to her and said, no, there's better days ahead. That's good news. Verse 19, God opened her eyes. And she saw a well of water. Now, will you show me somewhere between verse 18 and 19 where it says God put a well of water there? But she couldn't see it. She was blinded by her circumstances. She was blinded by her fear. The solution was there. The answer was there. She could take rest. She could rehydrate. She could re-energize. She could get her wits about her. She could wipe her face and wipe his face. But she couldn't see it. God opened her eyes. She said, well, the solution was right before me all this time. How many of us have ever done that? The solution was there all the time. We had no idea, but there was the answer. She went, filled the bottle with water, and gave the lad drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. His mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. Then we see where Abraham was at Beersheba and established a well and called that well a well of oath or Beersheba. Because they swear an oath, and that's in verse number 31. Because they were having, again, trouble between their people. In chapter 22, it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham or test Abraham, and said to him, Abraham, and Abraham said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac. Why his only son? Because he's a son of promise. Whom thou lovest, get thee to the land of Moriah. Offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. So he travels to Mount Moriah, modern-day Jerusalem, where the temple stands today. It's reasonably considered to be that site where Abraham offered Isaac. He rose up early in the morning and took two of his young men, verse 3, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, rose up, went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. He said, That's got to be the place. And Abraham said to his young men, Abide ye here, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. So nobody knew what was going on, right? Did Isaac know? Not yet. He didn't know. Abraham's the only one. God said, There you want to offer your only son, Isaac. And Abraham thought, Well, I got another one, so if I lose this one, it'd be all right. No, that's not what he said. He said, We're going to go up there, and when we come back, we're coming back. We are coming back. You see, he had confidence in God that God would not do something that would destroy him. He would not give him and then take away. He knew that. He had that confidence. We will go yonder and come again to you. Verse 6. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, laid it upon Isaac his son, took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they both went together. And Isaac spake to Abraham his father, and he began to understand something, didn't he? My father? He said, Here am I, my son. He said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for a burnt offering? Well, we're missing something. You said we were coming up here to do an offering. Where is it? And Abraham says, The Lord will provide himself an offering. My God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went, both of them together. Isaac knew what offerings meant. He understood what was going to happen or what was supposed to happen. But he said, We're missing a component to this. And God, and Abraham makes this statement. God will, what? Provide himself. Isn't that an incredible statement? What did he do at Calvary? He provided himself. He didn't ask anybody else to do it. He got up there himself. They nailed him to the cross. Who? Himself. He didn't say, Well, somebody else get up here for me. He didn't do that. He provided himself. He will provide himself a lamb for burnt offering. So they went both of them together. They came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Have you pictured this? Have you imagined this as you studied it this week and said, How did this go? How many of y'all ever chased a 10-year-old? All right, Abraham was older here than all of us. Now, that doesn't mean he had the same physical health and strength as we do. He, you know, may have been stronger and all that kind of stuff. But how many of y'all ever chased a 10-year-old? What do you see here? You see trust. Isaac, he knows his dad. He trusts his dad. He believes in his dad. And if this is, if he ends up dying on that altar, he trusts his dad enough. And Abraham trusts God enough. You see, we never find any case with Abraham and his faith where a human sacrifice was demanded. Never. The only time that a human sacrifice has ever been demanded by God was on the cross. And he provided himself. He gave himself. Because he's the only lamb that was perfect enough to forgive our sins. If we died for our sins or you died for mine, we can't even die for each other's sins. because not one of us is pure enough to offer ourselves as sacrifices before God. Only Jesus. So human sacrifice was not in order. God said, bring your son up here and offer him as a burnt offering. And Abraham said, Lord, I trust you. Whatever you say, I'll do it. Isaac says, where's the lamb? God said, or Abraham says, Isaac, don't worry about it. God will provide it. Gets up there, and Isaac's looking around. Everything's done. We're now to the point where we've got to make an offering. We've got to have a lamb. And Abraham ties Isaac up and puts him on the altar. Trust. Trust. Complete trust. Surrender. Submission. God's never asked us to do anything like this. Do we trust him? With the now, in comparison to this, the little things he asked us to do. Verse 10, Abraham stretched forth his hand, and he took the knife to slay his son. Why? Because God said, go to a place I will tell you and offer your only son. And Abraham's there, and that's what he's there to do. And the angel of the Lord called out to him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, thanks for the interruption. Here am I. And he said, verse 12, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything to him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. He was willing to do it. Complete trust. Abraham is called the friend of God. Abraham is considered the father of our faith. Why? Because he believed God. He trusted God. God said, I want you to leave where you are and go to a land that I will show you. Well, where is it? I'll show you when you get there. He left and he traveled. Now he's settled. He's got a family. And God says, I want you to go to a mountain that I will show you. And there I want you to make an offering. He doesn't even know where he's going. 3 days journey to a place he doesn't know. Just Moriah, just someplace. Verse 13, Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. Why is that significant? Okay, because God provided him. Okay, couldn't run away. He was stuck. Because he had to be a lamb without blemish. You see, this, if he'd have been caught in the thicket and the thorns were tearing at him and he was bleeding, now he's marred. Now he's no good. But it was caught in his horns. So there's nothing wrong with the rest of them. He's without blemish. That's exactly the reason. So now he's got an offering to make. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering instead of his son. Boy, wasn't Isaac happy about that. Verse 14, Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. As it is said to this day, in the mounts of the Lord it shall be seen. Why? Because God will provide. So when God says to go, we just go. When God says to do, we just do. When God says to say, we just say. Why? Because God will provide. If we fall short, God will provide. If we don't have it, God will provide. We've got to trust him. We've got to trust him. Verse 15, the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, by myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed because thou hast obeyed my voice. So hold on just a second. For everyone else, all the blessings of all the generations, it came back to the obedience of one man. And I know that in this time and all the signs, we anticipate the return of the Lord, the rapture, the tribulation, all of those things that we expect, they're on the calendar in the near future. But what if we can make a difference for the generations? For our children, for our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, for all the generations. How many generations are there going to be before the Lord comes back? I know we think it's near, but so did Paul. So what if my obedience, if your obedience today makes a difference for decades down the road? Or our rebellion, our resistance, our hesitation, because thou hast obeyed my voice. In chapter 23, the Bible tells us that Sarah was 127 years old, and Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same as Hebron, the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to Mount to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. He bought a place, the cave, verse 17, the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was therein, all the trees that were in the field, that were in the borders round about, were made sure. And Abraham, unto Abraham for a possession in the presence of the children of Heth before all that went in at the gate of the city. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. Now, that is a significant place today. You can go, you could travel there. It's a Palestinian land. It's interesting because this is the, to Jews, it is the second most holy site next to the temple itself in Jerusalem. To the Muslims, of course, remember, that's their lineage also, it is a most holy site. It is the only holy site, memorial, monument that has not been destroyed through all the wars of all the centuries. Because it's the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians are all in awe of Abraham and Sarah. Where Sarah is buried, where Abraham is buried, where Jacob and Leah and Isaac and Rebekah, they're all buried there. You could go, it's a building. Of course, it was secured as a building. And it's 55% a Jewish site and 45% a Muslim site. It's one building that has an entrance for the Muslims and an entrance for the Jews. 10 days a year is surrendered 100% to the Jews for their holy days. And 10 days a year it's surrendered 100% to the Muslims for their holy days. But for 325 days a year, it's shared between Muslims and Jews, this one place, because of Abraham and Sarah. This, you could go there because they have the markings for Isaac and Rebekah, but remember, Sarah's buried in a cave. And there's access to that too. They look through and they pray. Guys, we don't pray to dead people, but we honor them. And so, it's a very interesting sight, but that connection, by the way, do you think the Jews want it all to themselves? Do you think that the Muslims want it all to themselves? And yet they have found a commonality, a shared value, so that they each can come in from different directions and honor the patriarchs of their people, of their faith. Interesting, but I just thought that was in, and that's in Hebron. Hebron is a place that we still hear about today. It's very significant to the history of Israel. but it is a land, and that is the one place where they find a shared reverence. You know, the temple, on the Temple Mount, we call it Solomon's Temple, God's temple that Solomon built, it was destroyed, right? You go there today, and there's a mosque at one end, and then there's a shrine, you know, where they say there's a rock there where Muhammad ascended or where Ishmael was offered. Muslims have control, and Jews are not allowed to go on there without special exceptions. On the mount, they can go outside and pray at the Western Wall. We see that on the news all the time. But they've locked them out of the temple. And yet, where Abraham and Sarah are buried, they found a way to get along. So there is a way for us to find peace. Anyway, questions, comments, criticisms? Yeah, that's right. It goes back to Abraham. Because Abraham is buried there, they're able to find commonality. All right, let's take a break.